Family is very important, and I think it's important to maintain those relationships. I think cousins are very important. I think it's the extended family situation is undervalued in our society. And when you actually know your cousins as if they're one of your siblings, I think it's one of the best things you can do for yourself. Keep in the best physical shape you possibly can. It gives you the energy you need to deal with getting older. You have to exercise routinely to keep up. You have to always focus on resilience and how you can get it. There's a lot of books written about it, talking about like the last third of your life is going to be a lot different than your other two-thirds because you're no longer focused on your career.
With so many questions surrounding the post-retirement years, both in prepping for and navigating after, people are certainly looking for those answers. Well, on today's episode, your host and the senior editor, Robert J. LaCosta, wraps up his discussion with Paula LaCosta. This time, Paula brings sound advice from her personal experience on how she prepared for, adjusted with, and is navigating those post-retirement years. Ultimately, Paula helps us understand how we can live off of fulfilled life in those post-retirement years. So, without further ado, here is your host and the senior editor, Robert J. LaCosta.
Now, we're two decades later, Paula, and financially, somehow, you've been able to do that for two decades. And there's probably people listening right now who are wondering what it's like to maybe have a career abbreviated a little bit and still be able to enjoy and lead a fulfilling life, you know, in the post-retirement years. You happen to be a professional. Everybody listening is not.
Right.
So you had some advantages. What did you do? Did you kind of become a manager of your own money? How did you do it? How did you do it for 20 years?
Well, I had some savings, obviously.
Yeah.
And I basically tried to transition from managing bonds to managing stocks, which was very challenging because the pace is totally different and the research involved is a lot different. And while I did pretty well, you know, 2009, I got clobbered like most people. And I also got clobbered in 2022. But, you know, I've been able to survive for 20 years. I mean, the last time I worked full time was 2004. And the year that I worked, 2004, I made about, I'd say, one-third the amount of money I was making when I worked with Dean Witter. So it wasn't like I could just maintain my lifestyle totally at that level. You know, you had to cut back quite a bit. And so eventually, of course, I had to sell my second home, buy a small apartment, and transition that way. And downsizing was very difficult for me.
Downsizing, I think, is difficult for most people. Some people welcome it.
But right.
Other people have a hard time with it, especially if finances are dictated. It's one thing to kind of plan a transition. It's another thing to have a transition come to you. What would you say to people? You went through several transitions in those 20-something years. Did each change look a little different, the way you reacted to something? I mean, like you said, we had some bounces in the stock market.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty angry about a couple of things. One, that the particular broker I had was really not reasonable because she was so used to managing money of people who had about four times the amount of money I had. So she was not appropriate for my...
She could be a little sloppier.
No, it wasn't her. It was her assistant who didn't give her the messages.
Oh, yeah.
It was totally his fault.
Oh, I see. In going through changes, especially as we get older and our finances change, I've heard that in my career, you know, I'm on a fixed income. I've heard that 1,000 times.
Right.
And sometimes their idea of fixed income is what most people would love to have. Other times it's a true wailing. You've had to stretch it. You've had to go from being a Wall Street person to a post-Wall Street person, and you were able to do it. And that's remarkable.
Yeah, well, I had a better capital base than a lot of people.
Right. But you can lose savings very quickly. Anybody.
Oh, absolutely.
So you didn't. I mean, you might have had your setbacks, but you didn't lose it.
No, I didn't lose 100% of my savings. I never did that. No.
Tell us a little bit about what you're doing now. You're a New Yorker.
Yeah, I mean, well, from a financial point of view, the one thing that really tricked me up was once interest rates went way high like they are now. I used to be able to borrow money at maybe 3%, 5% and increase my returns on my portfolio.
A lot of people got spoiled with those low interest rates.
Right. And you could have a business where you managed to lever up and still make money. Mm-hmm. At 10%, it's very difficult to do that. So you can't really just borrow a lot of money to do that. And the other thing is, because I happen to be in Manhattan and I have a co-op instead of a condo, you can't take home equity lines of credit out. You can't transition as easily. Like if I still had my house as opposed to a co-op, I could have just borrowed against it, done my kitchen over, done things like that that I wanted to do. And so it is challenging from that point of view. The other thing is what you have to do in your spare time changes. I had to let go of my opera subscription. I still had a subscription to the Philharmonic, which is about probably a quarter of the price of the Met. You know, I ended up figuring out ways to have entertainment at half price or next to nothing. I belong to a club where I can get an off-Broadway ticket for $4.50.
Free concerts.
There's a lot of free concerts if you know how to find them in New York. And now Lincoln Center has the David Rubenstein Atrium. And every Thursday night, they have a concert of some sort or a lecture.
And then what about as you transition out of a full-time employment, relationships? You know, there's not going to lunch or dinner with coworkers anymore or even clients or vendors, or whatever. How did that change?
Oh, it was terrible.
How so?
I really had a hard time with that because, you know, initially I was still living with somebody, okay? But by 2010, he went into a nursing home, right? Mm-hmm. So I was by myself. And at the same time, a lot of my friends had started to transition out of New York City to other places.
Yeah.
And so my social network kept shrinking.
How is that for a city girl? I mean,
it's difficult because, you know, people move to Florida for tax purposes.
Sure.
They move to Connecticut because they get married. They move to California because they have to take care of an elderly parent. And four of my friends moved to California to take care of elderly parents. I mean, that's a lot of people.
And half of New York State is now living in North Carolina.
Well, that makes sense.
You know? So your professional life, social life changes, and spiritually, you've probably grown through these changes.
I don't know. Maybe I have. Maybe I haven't. I still go to the same kind of church. I don't, you know, I didn't do any major transit.
Well, I mean internally.
Oh, internally.
The way you look at things, you know, you've had to go through several transitions. That takes some moxie.
Well, you have to always focus on resilience and how you can get it. There's a lot of books written about it. Stephen Southwick's book on resilience is very good. A lot of the other books I've read, which are similar. There's also a good book that David Brooks wrote called The Second Mountain. Talking about like the last third of your life is going to be a lot different than your other two thirds because you're no longer focused on your career, you know.
John Eldridge has a beautiful book, Resilient, that approaches it from a spiritual point of view and a post-pandemic point of view because so many people got smacked with COVID-related things in their life. So,
sure.
You know, Paula, you're now in your 70s. Our bodies change. We have to change with them. We don't. Our bodies don't really give us a choice to not change. We have to adapt. How have you done with that?
Well, that was one of the biggest problems when I stopped working because I had to pay for my own health insurance, and it didn't occur to me to insist that they give me health insurance.
I think a lot of people get tripped up on that.
And what happened is once Obamacare came in, instead of spending $1,000 a month for health insurance, because my income was over $50,000 a year, I had to pay $1,660 a month for insurance, and it wasn't even as good a policy as I had had.
Yeah, that's what happened. It got ordered down. That'll wake you up in the morning, $1,600.
I mean, it's really extreme.
Well, so what do you do now? How do you handle exercise or just keeping yourself fit? Because you obviously read. You obviously have a lot of cultural activities that you're involved in, but our bodies are not going to do well just sitting at an opera. So what do you do? New Yorkers walk.
I do walk, but for my neuroma was on my foot was so bad that I couldn't walk a normal amount for like a couple of years now. And I finally got the proper orthotics. I mean, I kept going to different podiatrists and orthopedic doctors to get it straight. And I finally have decent orthotics and I can walk an average of 2 miles to 2.5 miles a day.
People who don't live in New York City don't understand how key walking is, because if they're not from the metropolitan area, they see television, flag a cab or whatever. Now Uber.
I can't afford a cab anymore.
Well, who could except, you know, people who are really making
working
somebody. Because I don't know whether people realize just how expensive transportation could get if you do it that way. So walking is a big thing in New York. So you actually get exercise in a pragmatic way. Go to the store or go uptown. There's also the issue of commuting. When you were outside New York, where did you live? New Jersey.
Yeah, and I would commute frequently, an hour and 40 minutes each way. And it's something that people outside the metro area do not comprehend. And some of the associates I had once I was living in the city complained to me, oh, I have to commute more than 45 minutes on the subway. And I said, when I was your age, I was commuting an hour and 40 minutes each way. I don't understand why you're complaining. And they'd go, oh, you're just being nasty.
And you could get your pocketbook ripped off your shoulder. You could misstep onto a subway or train. You could get pushed around if the doors were closing. People don't understand what a commute is like. Trains late.
That was my biggest problem in New Jersey. The trains just were late all the time. And I was getting to the point where I was late for work so often, I just said, I've got to move.
What was that like?
The transition? It was terrible. I had no friends in Manhattan.
And how did you land on an apartment? How did you figure that out?
I just went to a couple of different brokers and just said, well, you know, I had a lot of furniture from my house. And I ended up renting my house in New Jersey. And it was kind of a break-even effect. You know, I didn't really make any money by renting it out. I was actually losing a little bit. But
you didn't want to be that far from Wall Street either.
Well, no. I mean, I ended up renting in the Village. And so that was about a 40-minute commute to my office.
And that's
45
not,
minutes.
And that's not exactly on the upper end of the island.
No, but, you know, you have to get to the subway at 10 of 8.
Yeah.
At least. Otherwise, you know, if you get a later subway, you could be late for work.
And if the subway's not run on time.
And the subways are a pain. Some of them work on time. Some don't.
How do you handle the stress of New York City? Some people go into New York City and feel it's very stressful, especially if they might be in the country or rural, suburban or smaller city regions where they can get to and fro pretty easily. It's not always that simple in Manhattan.
No, and if you have to drive anywhere, it's always a pain. There have been times when I couldn't figure out how to get someplace by subway, and I took my car.
Then there's parking.
And the parking's $40, you know. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, how do you handle the stress of New York, or don't you feel it anymore? Because you're so...
Well, I do have stress, but, you know, I just have to deal with it like anything else in life.
Yeah. Probably more used to it than you think you are. The specific stress of living in one of the craziest cities in the world. As far as transportation, the whole
yeah, but the subways do work pretty well. I mean, I know people who take them, but I think it's silly. It's so much faster than taking the bus.
Well, Paula, if you were to be a mentor to someone, say in their 40s or 50s right now, who may not know what's coming up in their 50s, they might get laid off, they might retire. Just, you know, they planned it. They might have a health issue that forces them into early retirement, or they might be 5 years, 10 years away. What would you say to them as far as them looking ahead?
Keep in the best physical shape you possibly can.
What does that do for you?
It gives you the energy you need to deal with getting older.
Because, that sounds like an oxymoron.
Well, you have to exercise routinely to keep up. And like I've had problems with my knee, with my foot, my lungs, you know, there's with my shoulders. I mean, all these things are commonplace once you hit 50, really.
And yet here you are in your 70s and you're driving around Manhattan, driving to New Jersey. You're involved in caregiving for our dear sister, Mary Ann, and Our sister Lucille expects you for visits with our brother-in-law. You are involved in other things. You volunteered. So even though you've had some physical limitations, you've, just like your finances, you've managed to keep going with each decade.
Yeah, but you know, it's at some point my finances are going to have to take a major shift because I don't think my Social Security is going to cover my future expenses.
I think everybody's facing that. And how does that make you feel knowing that you've been able to get over those other hurdles in your earlier decades?
Well, obviously going to go to a couple of financial consultants I have and just ask them if they have any ideas that I hadn't thought of.
And if it requires some cutbacks, sacrifices, you've already been through that. You've done that already.
Yeah, I don't know what else I could do besides sell my apartment, move to the middle of nowhere, you know, because that I'm sure would psychologically be devastating for me.
I am sure a lot of people are in the same position. I remember a financial advisor telling me that the number one fear that seniors and pre-retirees and recently retired, and even those deep into the retirement have, the number one fear they have is that they'll outlive their money. And yet we had a father who worried about that constantly. I don't know whether you remember that or not, but he sure shared that with me enough times when I was an impressionable 20-something year old. And I didn't really understand why he was so obsessed with running out of money. Now that I'm older, I understand it. He never ran out of money, though.
Well, I understood it because I did his taxes.
Yeah. So. But he didn't run out of money.
No, he left money to 7 different kids.
But in his head,
right,
it consumed him.
Yeah.
And it didn't need to.
No, but a lot of people are living a lot longer. People aren't living to 78 anymore. They're living to 98.
Well, we lost some aunts and uncles in their 60s. We lost our mother in the 60s. Daddy almost lived to 80. So he did live. He lived, you know, that's proverbial 70 or 80.
Right, but according to the IRS, my life expectancy is 87.
Yep.
So, you know, it's another 15 years.
All right. Well, hot dog here and there might help you get to 87. I'm
not sure about that. Vegetables, maybe.
Vegetable stand. I would say, Paula, you've been an amazing aunt. You don't have any children, biological children, but you have nieces and nephews. What part has that played in your mental health and spiritual health through those years that were sometimes had ups and downs? What part does family play for you, especially being an aunt?
Family's very important. I really miss both of my brothers who have passed away tremendously.
Yeah, likewise.
John and Michael. I mean, Michael and I used to talk every Sunday evening. And John and I would maybe not talk quite as often, but we would text or email, you know. And I think it's important to maintain those relationships. But like I said, it's very disconcerting to me that so many of my friends left Manhattan. I have very few friends in Manhattan anymore.
Well, you've been a key role model in every one of your nephews and nieces in one way or the other, maybe not a key in some, but a major influence. What kind of life has that brought to you?
Well, it was good when I had my house because I got to see my nephew and understand him better than I would have otherwise. My brother, Michael, as well. They used to come to my shore house routinely.
And how old was Michael at the time? Junior? Teen? Early 20s?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I got my house in 2000, so he was young.
So how does that, you know, when you pick up a little baby like Clara or Nova or a teenager or 20-something or 40-something, those intergenerational connections, they help keep you going too, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But it occurred to me that, you know, I don't really know. I think it's easier to transition to being an aunt when somebody's a youngster and when they're older. It's more of a challenge.
Well, you can talk to their parents. They'll tell you the same thing.
It's just not the same, you know?
They have their own life, and they have to fly. Free bird.
Yeah, they have to fly, but they also need to be able to talk to you on a different level.
As an adult. And then they become kind of friends. And parents will often describe their adult children as becoming more friends.
Right.
I mean, it's before the role reversal. I'm talking, you know, while everybody's healthy. Well, you've done everything from jumping on airplanes, jumping in your car, and made sure that you kept in touch, visited. You go to First Holy Communions, confirmations, birthdays, weddings, and you've been so involved in their lives. You've done a remarkable thing, and you've done it for the last 20-something years without working full-time. That's amazing. I think there's also, you know, you tip your hat to God who has sustained you through all the changes.
Absolutely.
You know, and allowed you to be as fortunate as you are to be able to keep in touch with everybody that you love so much.
Yeah, and of course, as you get older, you lose a lot of your friends.
Well, one of the remarkable things about you, Paula, is you remember people. You remember their names, their faces. And as a person who has struggles with that, I've always admired that about you. And since we had, and if you just turned in, I'm talking to my sister, so we're talking some shop here, family shop, but with seven children, we were able to interrelate between peer levels. So as a younger sib, I was able to at least know some of your friends. The older sibs knew the younger sibs' friends probably better. But that was a bonus when you have a big family, because you not only have your own friends, you have your siblings' friends. And we've all maintained those friendships. Cousins also.
I think cousins are very important. I think it's the extended family situation is undervalued in our society. And when you actually know your cousins as if they're one of your siblings, I think it's one of the best things you can do for yourself.
I think you've made the effort, because our society today is very spread out and has been since airplane travel, I guess, the last half century or whatever. People can jump on airplanes, take a job 3,000, 5,000, 7,000 miles away and still get back for turkey on Thanksgiving. But in the meanwhile, it makes it tougher to keep in touch. You've done that despite those distances.
Yeah. Well, it's difficult. I mean, I have friends who've moved to Florida. I mean, I don't see them often.
But you make deliberate efforts to do so. And some people don't. And that's to be admired. You've done some volunteer work. You've really managed to not so much keep yourself busy as lead a fulfilling life. And you're very blessed, Paul. I'm proud to be your brother. And this has been a nice interview.
Thanks, Bob.
There's a lot of people out there who will learn from some of the things you shared. They might not have to run down 72 floors times two. And they might not experience a bombing. They might not experience the hectic life of a New York City Wall Street person. But they will certainly understand from what you've shared about transitions and going with the flow, trusting God and rolling along and keeping family and your faith in front of you. So thank you.
You're welcome, Bob.
Well, we've been talking with Paula LaCosta, who was a portfolio manager. The list goes on and on. Needless to say, she's had a very successful career and a successful retirement years, as we say here on the Age Sage. So this is Robert LaCosta. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Age Sage.
And some excellent wisdom from our guest today, Paula LaCosta, right here on The Age Sage. Thank you so much for tuning in. And of course, be sure to check out all the episodes of The Age Sage on any major podcast platform. It's The Age Sage with the one and only Robert J. LaCosta.